You'll probably realise that our colleague in Sydney, Richard Glover, whose writing appears in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, is enduring dry July. No alcohol for a month. He and others who've given up the terps to raise funds for charity, as well as to give their bodies a break, tell us frequently what a struggle it's been and how much they're looking forward to August. But what if August never comes? What if staying dry is a lifetime's vigilance instead of a few days' pause? Ross Fitzgerald is another journalist. His pieces appear regularly in the Australian newspaper, and his book is called My Name is Ross, An Alcoholic's Journey.
Let me put some of my cards on the table. I turn 69 on Christmas Day, and if I survive until Australia Day, I will have had no alcohol or other drugs for the last 44 years. This means that I've had 44 more years on the planet than I would have otherwise had. Like a lot of teenagers who are prone to addiction, I got into trouble with alcohol at an early age. But I certainly don't regret starting drinking. A quick précis of my life is that if I hadn't found alcohol at 14, I would have most likely suicided at 17. But if I hadn't stopped drinking at 24, I wouldn't have made 25. It's important to stress that alcoholism is a health problem, not a moral problem. Alcoholics are not bad people who need to be good, but people suffering from an illness who can recover if they learn to totally abstain from drinking alcohol one day at a time. Yet in spite of abstinence having saved the lives of countless people, not drinking alcohol at all is still seen by many as rather weird, especially if one is young. Yet these days, a number of 17 and 18-year-old drinkers have done so much damage to themselves and others that they are seeking help, including joining groups like Alcoholics Anonymous, whose meetings they regularly attend in order to remain abstinent from alcohol and other drugs. In a society like ours, with such an entrenched drink culture and with such a politically powerful liquor industry, advertising and significant social and peer group pressure is often applied to those of us who need to remain abstinent in order to stay alive, let alone to lead productive lives. This even applies in our prisons, where there is a core of about 40% of inmates who need to remain totally abstinent if they are not to become recidivists. Yet even within our prison population, there is strong pressure from psychologists and other professionals against the notion of total abstinence. At social functions after my third or fourth mineral water or fruit juice, I'm often asked, "What's the matter, don't you drink?" To which I sometimes reply, "What do you think I'm doing, eating a sandwich?" Of course I drink. I drink a lot. It's just that I don't drink alcohol. This is because, as with about 7 to 8% of the Australian population, one glass containing alcohol is one too many, and 100 are not enough. The trick for people like me is therefore not to imbibe the first one and to have nothing in my blood but blood. Although not always the case, quite often a propensity to alcoholism and other drug addiction is genetically based. My father was a very tough footballer who played Aussie rules for Collingwood, but he never drank a teaspoonful of alcohol in his entire life. This was because his father was an alcoholic whose drinking blighted his marriage and destroyed the family business. My first drink of alcohol, at aged 14, was like an injection of rocket fuel. Very soon I was drinking as much as I could, usually on my own. Quite often, my idea of a good Saturday night was to go to Melbourne's Brighton Cemetery with a flagon of claret and sit drinking in front of Adam Lindsay Gordon's obelisk, which reads, "Life is only froth and bubble, two things stand like stone, kindness in another's trouble, courage in your own." I now think it's significant that instead of being attracted to the grave of the gangster Squizzy Taylor or to the bent Victorian politician Sir Thomas Bent, I found myself in front of Gordon, the alcoholic poet, who killed himself on the beach near Park Street, Brighton, where when young I often used to drink myself. When I was 15, I stumbled home drunk from Middle Brighton Beach at about 2 a.m. My father, tall and erect, was waiting up for me. "What are you celebrating, son?" he said. I had no answer. I didn't know that I was drinking because I had to. Then Dad told me something I've never forgotten. "When I was your age, son, I lost 2 bicycles looking for my father." It seems to me that my dad knew that, like his father, he was potentially an alcoholic, and that's why he never drank at all. He believed, from experiencing his father's alcoholism, that if he started drinking, he'd be putting himself at great risk. He also understood that booze would also get me, his only living child, into terrible trouble. And it did. From the age of 14 to 24, alcohol caused me and those close to me enormous damage. But despite being almost 44 years sober, I still need to be vigilant and to realise that what matters most in my life is that I don't pick up the first drink of alcohol one day at a time. 20 years ago, I was waiting for my friend Jim McLean, then a psychologist at Sydney's Langton Clinic, when it was abstinence-oriented. Through the paper-thin walls, I overheard Jim talking to a new patient whose name I recall was Boris. Said Jim, "Boris, now that you've been admitted to this hospital as an alcoholic, for as long as you live, you'll be spending a lot of your time with other alcoholics. The big question is whether they're going to be drunken ones or sober ones." McLean continued, "If you cross the road outside the clinic, get run over by a truck and break your hip, depending on your personality, it may take 3 months, it may take 6 months, it may even take a year. But eventually you'll forget the dreadful pain of breaking your hip and you'll be able to cross a road without a qualm." That forgetfulness, he explained, is an important part of human evolution. If we remembered all the dreadful pains of existence, we'd never get out of bed. That forgetfulness, he said, is enormously helpful, except for what you've got, Boris, except for alcoholism. You need to remember organically what has happened to you. "The best way that I know of achieving this," said Jim, "is to regularly attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and listen to other alcoholics tell what they used to be like, what happened, and what they are like now." Yet regretfully, these days, as a therapeutic aim, abstinence is often regarded with askance. So thank goodness for groups like the Salvation Army, who, in treating alcoholics and other addicts, still aim for complete abstinence rather than so-called controlled drinking or controlled drug use. Indeed, in many centres across Australia, the Salvos Bridge program continues to make pivotal use of Alcoholics Anonymous, its meetings, and its 12 suggested steps of recovery. The first of AA's 12 steps says, "We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable." No matter how long they have been sober, alcoholics in the Bridge program and in AA always speak of their alcoholism in the present tense. For example, "My name is Ross and I'm an alcoholic." This is because alcoholics and other addicts are never really cured of their alcoholism and addiction, in that if they start drinking and using again, they are almost certainly bound, over the long term, to relapse into uncontrolled drinking and other drug use. In order to stay alive and to live useful and meaningful lives, most alcoholics and other addicts need to make a daily commitment to a life choice of stable abstinence. Psychoanalyst Carl Jung, who was instrumental in the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous, explained that the Latin word for alcohol is spiritus, and that we use the same word for what he termed the highest religious experience as well as the most depraving poison. "When dealing with alcoholism," said Jung, "the most helpful formula is spiritus contra spiritum, spirit against spirit, or power against power." That is why AA suggests that newcomers to the program try to develop a belief in what it calls a power greater than oneself. This notion can apply equally for theists and for non-theists, for agnostics and for atheists like myself. All that is required is the realization that, like cancer or diabetes, usually alcoholism cannot, over the long term, be vanquished by an isolated exercise of the individual's will. To most people, it is obvious, given the damaging, life-threatening consequences of alcoholism and other drug addiction, and the proven inability of alcoholics and addicts to control their drinking or drug use, that the goal of treatment should be total abstinence. Yet in the past 30 years in Australia and elsewhere in the West, an anti-abstinence orthodoxy has become entrenched in health department and corrective services practice and policy, with extremely unfortunate results. What is particularly damaging is that alcoholics and other addicts and their families are given the false hope that controlled drinking is a viable option and that abstinence is no longer necessary. As Harvard University's Professor George Valiant succinctly put it in his path-breaking study, The Natural History of Alcoholism Revisited, quote, "Training alcohol-dependent individuals to achieve stable return to controlled drinking is a mirage. Hopeful initial reports have not led to replication." Yet despite overwhelming long-term evidence to the contrary, the proponents of controlled usage remain in favour with government bureaucrats and health professionals, while those who advocate a strategy of abstinence are often marginalised or ignored. The fact is that while 4 to 5 years of abstinence is adequate to predict a stable future, return to controlled drinking is a much less stable state. This is not to dispute that alcoholics and addicts are resistant to adopting a goal of abstinence and often strongly deny the assertion that they cannot safely use alcohol or other drugs. Indeed, such resistance and denial are integral parts of their disorder. Theoreticians who advocate controlled usage do so precisely because it is difficult for alcohol-dependent and other drug-dependent people to consider abstinence. But there is no empirical evidence that controlled drinking or drug use strategies work for such people for any extended period. The truth is that an alcoholic's or an addict's best chance of recovery lies in practicing total abstinence. And Alcoholics Anonymous is by far the most successful agency in achieving this vital goal. So, as I often say to newcomers and their families, why not avail yourself of the best? Robin, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Ross Fitzgerald writes for The Australian and other publications. His book, just out, is My Name is Ross, An Alcoholic's Journey. Next week, we return to the contentious topic of windmills. I'm Robin Williams.